Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, Happy New Year, and welcome to episode 7 of the A24 project here on the Nerd Party, the podcast that specializes in the back catalogue of A24 films and is bringing you from the very first one all the way up to current date. But we are currently on episode 7, and today Lee and I are going to be looking at Tusk and Say When / Laggies, depending on whether you saw it in the UK or the US. So Lee, how are you? Are you excited to be back for a new year of A24?
Yeah, I'm really excited. This is the year that 8th grade finally gets a UK release, so this is a good start to the A24 year for me.
Yeah, but in terms of the A24 project, it's probably going to be next year before we get around to actually reviewing that one, because they've got quite a few films in their back catalogue and it's going to take us a while to get through all of them. But excited to... We've got two interesting ones to talk about this week. Certainly one is a very interesting one to talk about, but as always, we like to start off the episodes now with a little section we call the A24 Hour News. And today we have some big news, which just dropped this week, which is that Mid-90s, directed by Jonah Hill, which is one of the new A24 releases, is going to open the Glasgow Film Festival on February the 20th. And this was a very anticipated film for both of us, so it's exciting to see. We both had an inkling that 8th grade might appear somewhere at the Glasgow Film Festival, but are you excited to potentially see Mid-90s?
Yeah, I'm really excited for it. It seems to be a film that I love, a slice of life kind of movie, so I'm really hopeful that by the time this episode comes out, we'll have either failed or succeeded in getting tickets to the opening night premiere. So I'm sure the people in America are laughing. They're thinking, oh, we've already got this film on video on demand or Blu-ray in America, and here we are finally only getting it. But I have a feeling this one might be worth the wait.
Yeah, no, I think so. Hopefully, fingers crossed, we get through on the booking system. If not, we're going to have to pull in a few favours and pull some strings and use our A24 project credentials to try and get into the opening party. But, I mean, I'm a huge fan of like skateboarding films like Lords of Dogtown, Dogtown and the Z-Boys, all that mayhem. So interested to see this film in Jonah Hill's take on the sort of early mid-90s skateboarding and hip-hop sort of worlds colliding. So yeah, very exciting.
People will be shooting in like black suits on the red carpet for low-hanging trousers instead.
Well, I mean, the Glasgow Film Festival, often they're very good with their parties and often have theme things. Last year, Isle of Dogs, they had like Japanese drummers, so who knows, maybe they'll try and organise the opening party in a skate park, who knows.
Yeah.
Who knows? But there's not much else in terms of news. It's been quite quiet over the Christmas period, except the sort of award. The road to Oscar continues. Sadly, there was no joy for Elsie Fisher in 8th grade at the Golden Globes, but Ethan Hawke and Toni Collette have continued to pick up some sort of Critics Association awards along the way. But by the time this podcast drops, the BAFTA nominations should be out, and we'll be getting close to the Oscar nominations as well. So I guess we'll have to see if they make it there. Fingers crossed that they do. And I mean, the results of the Golden Globes were shocking to say the least, and I think. You know, the awards season needs to get back on track, and as Ethan Hawke in First Reform would say, well, somebody has to do something. You know, we need to get it right, and the right films being rewarded. But we're not going to get into a diatribe, but the Golden Globes are here to talk about A24 films, and the first film we're going to talk about is Tusk, which is directed by Kevin Smith, written by Kevin Smith, and I think is the only film I'm aware of that has been inspired by a Gumtree ad. Would that be fair to say?
I think it's the first one that's ever been inspired by potentially a podcast as well, so it's definitely a two for two.
I know, yeah, we're in a quite unique situation today because we are two men on a podcast discussing a film about two men on a podcast who are inspired by two men on a podcast discussing a Gumtree ad. I think that I'm right there. I've kind of, it's almost inception, the sort of number of levels that you've got of people talking about podcasts and podcasts and podcasts and podcasts and podcasts. But yeah, This is so I don't know if I'm Wallace and you're Terry, or it's the other way around. I don't know. Am I Kevin Smith or are you Scott Moser? Who knows which way around we are?
That's one for the audience members to decide.
I know neither of us really have a mustache, so it's quite tough to tell. But I basically did some research online in advance of this. So as I said, this was inspired by a Gumtree ad, not in America, but actually in the UK. It was placed on Gumtree for Brighton. And it turns out it was written by a guy called Chris Parkinson, who created it as a spoof. And this is the entire Gumtree ad. I'm just going to read it out loud. So it says, "Lodger required. Hello, I am looking for a lodger in my house. I've had a long, interesting life and have now chosen Brighton as a location for my retirement. Among the many things I have done in my life was to spend 3 years alone in St. Lawrence Island. Those were perhaps the most intense and fascinating years of my life, and I was kept in companionship with a walrus, which was named Gregory. Never have I had such a fulfilling friendship with anyone, human or otherwise. And upon leaving the island, I was heartbroken for months. I now find myself in a large house overlooking Queen's Park, and I'm keen to get a lodger. This is a position I am prepared to offer for free, e.g. no rent payable, on the fulfillment of some conditions. I have, over the last few months, been constructing a realistic walrus costume, which should fit most people of average proportions, and allow for full, easy movement in character. To take on the position as my lodger, you must be prepared to wear the walrus suit for approximately 2 hours a day. In practice, this is not 2 hours every day. I merely state it here so you are able to get a clear idea of the workload. Whilst in the walrus costume, you must be a walrus. There must be no speaking in a human voice, and any utterances should be made in the voice of a walrus. I believe there are recordings available on the web. To me, the voice is the most natural thing I've ever heard. Other duties will involve catching and eating the fish and crabs I will occasionally throw to you while you're being the walrus. With the exception of this, you will be free to do whatever you choose and have a spacious double room complete with run of the house, with the exception of my bedroom and my workshop, and use of all facilities within. I am a considerate person to share a house with, and this is a killer line, and other than playing the accordion, my tastes are easy to accommodate." So yeah, this appeared on Gumtree in 2013, and basically on Kevin Smith's podcast they'd found this and then were discussing it, and he was starting to spitball ideas for a movie. Now, if you've seen Tusker or know anything about it, the plot of the movie is basically very similar to what this Gumtree ad is, and he basically got people to sort of vote yes walrus or no walrus, and people said yes walrus, so he decided he was going to make the film. And the film is slightly different to this in that, as we discussed earlier, it contains two podcasters, Wallace and Teddy, and they have a podcast in America where they watch and make fun of viral videos. Wallace travels to Canada to interview a boy who became famous after cutting off his own leg with a samurai sword, but discovers to his disappointment that the boy had committed suicide. Looking to salvage his trip to Canada, he looks for an alternative interview subject and finds an advert in a local bar of someone looking for a lodger in return for listening to their stories of their amazing life. And he visits Howard Hall, only to discover that Howard is not prepared to let a certain memory die to Wallace's misfortune. So, Lee, before we get into real spoiler territory, what did you make of Tusk? Was this your first viewing of the film? Did you know much about of it going in? What were your thoughts?
I didn't know really anything. Well, I thought I did. I thought when I heard Tusk, when I was talking to my girlfriend the other day before I watched it for this for the first time, I was like, I'm off to watch this film for the podcast. I doubt it'll be your cup of tea. I know it's not your sort of thing. She's like, oh, well, what's about it? I was like, well, it's all about a guy who goes to interview someone that's actually a vampire. I don't know where I think it's there's a poster for Tusk where it's
yeah, he's got the long teeth.
And you see, yeah, and it looks like teeth, and I thought, oh yeah, it's about a vampire, and I knew there was an interview element or something like that from, I think maybe just Googling the film or something like that to download or whatever, but I'd sort of just remain relatively ignorant about it. So I was watching the film and I was like, oh yeah, oh here he is, he's off to the vampire's house now. Oh yeah, was it Mark Twain or something like that he's talking about? And I was like, oh yeah, because he's a vampire, cause he's an old guy. And then it's like, oh, he's drugging him. Oh, here we go, the vampires, eh? And then it's like, why the hell is he banging on about bloody walruses and stuff like that, you know, these crazy vampires. And then it was at the moment that Justin Long's character is turned into a walrus that I'm like, oh, right, it's not about a vampire, it's about a guy that gets turned into a walrus. My bad. So to say I was very wrong about what to expect with this film was a huge understatement.
It certainly sounds that way. Wow, that must have been a hell of an experience, thinking it was one type of film, only to then witness the gradual dismemberment and reconstitution of a human being into a walrus, essentially. Yeah, you sort of hit the nail on the head. For anyone who, you know, we're now completely into spoiler territory, but yeah, the podcast host gets drugged, and the guy basically lived on an island after being saved by a walrus and wanted to recreate his best friend, so has been drugging and trying to turn people into walruses by sewing them into a walrus suit made of human skin, and basically cuts their legs off and then fashions the leg bones into tusks. And yeah, I mean, this starts off as one sort of type of film and then quickly turns into sort of Kevin Smith's version of The Human Centipede almost. It's probably the film which it most reminded me of, and only the first Human Centipede, because the first Human Centipede actually in some places is actually a reasonably good film. It's actually got a very sort of sick black sense of humour, and if you take it that way, it's actually quite funny in places. But yeah, I mean, it was shocking to see where, just how far the film went with it, because it's certainly not the Kevin Smith we're used to with Clerks and Mallrats and Chasing Amy. This is a different side of him where he's basically letting loose his darkest sort of inner inhibitions and sort of wildest desires, letting them run free almost. So, I mean, what did you think of it when it got to that bit? What were your thoughts when it turned into this sort of body horror sort of situation?
I couldn't stop looking at it, to be honest. I found it so grotesque and disturbing. Like, it reminded me of a film that I think is somewhat underrated, The Fly 2.
Oh, I love The Fly 2.
Yeah, and there's so many little parallels with Tusk and The Fly 2, even sort of the ending. And you just, I find, like, one of my ideas of hell is, like, losing my legs or my arms. So I'm thinking, looking at this guy going, oh my god, I can't imagine the torture he's going through. And it's just like, you just feel so much pity for this guy that has been, you know, drugged, he has been surgically altered, he's, you know, he's been turned into a walrus in a human skin, and the costume is unbelievable. It genuinely, it's, I saw the film Sunday, and it's now Tuesday, and I haven't stopped thinking about this film since then. It's just that disturbing, and it's like, that's a positive of the film. I think the film for me was too long, but it was very, very memorable. And I think Michael Parks is brilliant in this film. I thought he was so good. And Johnny Depp was... I didn't even realise that was him until the
oh, did you not realise? So, oh, well, yeah. I guess because no, you were going in thinking it was a Kevin Smith vampire film. Yeah, the Johnny Depp sort of cameo would have passed you by. I mean, that was a bit that didn't work for me. That whole sort of final sequence where he sort of talking to the friends in the diner as they're trying to search for their missing friend was very off the wall and almost part of a different movie. I mean, when it goes into like a flashback where Johnny Depp in facial prosthetics with a sort of French Canadian accent is talking to Michael Parks, who is pretending to be a simpleton, is just like one of the most bizarre scenes I've seen in a long time. But yeah, I mean, have you seen Yoga Hosers? It was at the Edinburgh Film Festival a couple of years ago.
I have not seen Yoga Hosers, though.
It was the second part in a proposed Kevin Smith sort of Canadian trilogy, and it contains the same 7-Eleven store clerks and Johnny Depp's character, apparently. So they're the sort of connecting tissue in those two films. Connecting tissue, yeah, it's quite an actually... apt description for a walrus costume as well. But... yeah, no, I mean, it's, well, that bit was a bit riffy, but Michael Parks, I thought, was fantastic in the film. I mean, he was great in Red State as well, which was another Kevin Smith film, which didn't entirely work for me either, but there's no denying sort of Michael Park's performance when he gets like a script and just is able to just talk and talk and talk. You know, he's just fantastic in it. And yeah, I mean, I'd heard a lot of bad things about Tusk. It was really sort of written off. It doesn't have like the highest rating on sort of IMDb or Rotten Tomatoes, but I was actually really sort of kind of impressed with it. I thought, you know, I guess actually to the credit where you wouldn't have known this was a Kevin Smith film, you know. And you know, he's often accused of, you know, he's parodied himself, you know, by saying, you know, he just sticks the camera and, you know, he never does tracking shots, you know, it's just very sort of simple sort of point and shoot stuff. He's always focused on the dialogue and stuff like that. But you know, I thought it was quite an accomplished thing. And like you say, the makeup, it's by Robert Kurtzman, who did like part of the K&G sort of group, Greg Nicotero and all that, who've done like The Walking Dead and sort of From Dusk Till Dawn, Evil Dead sort of stuff like that. So I mean, the effects are absolutely fantastic. And I mean, what did you make of Justin Long and his transformation, not just physically but also acting wise?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one to do. Like, I can't imagine how challenging it was to be in that suit and essentially screaming and have all those different prosthetics in your mouth. I mean, that is certainly a challenging acting task that he's taken on there. I thought, like, you know, even sort of the transformation from that kind of cocky podcaster to someone that, you know, he's crying for help down the phone and, you know, he needs help. Like, you can sense the fear and panic and stuff that's kind of going through him. And I thought he did really, really well in this film. I thought him and Michael Parks really kind of worked really, really well off each other. I thought they were a really good pairing as a walrus and as a podcaster and as a psychopath, man. Really,
I think, yeah, because at the start of the film, you know, he's not a sympathetic character at all. He's cocky, you know, it's alluded to that he cheats on his girlfriend, he's a dick to his best friend, you know, he takes the piss out of these people, vulnerable people sometimes, you know, who, I mean, it's quite an interesting one because it basically shows, you know, that the effects that, you know, the this sort of quick flash in the pan fame that the internet can give, but also you're opening yourself up to public ridicule as well, so there's that aspect of it. But you know, you do end up sort of sympathizing for him, so in that ways it's a good respect. And you know, Justin Long is someone who, he doesn't have the greatest of times when it comes to cinema. You know, it's easy, either getting turned into a walrus or getting, you know, a wrench in the face or a dodgeball to the balls. You know, he's often quite on the receiving end of abuse. But you know, I thought he was good, and I think this is a really sort of underrated film that, you know, has almost been written off of either what the subject matter is. But you know, I thought it was definitely one that, it's one that I probably would, even though, you know, I was a Kevin Smith fan growing up, it's not one that I would have this was a first watch for me as well, and it's not one I actively have ever sought out to watch. I don't know if it was just put off by the sound or whatever, but I'm really glad that I watched it now, because I was actually really sort of, I'd say pleasantly surprised. But enjoying a film where a grown man has turned into a walrus.
Yeah, exactly. It's something that sounds very funny. You know, you think, oh, it's a Kevin Smith movie about a person being turned into a walrus, right? What's the kind of comedy gig? But I think I like the fact that it commits to sort of, it really goes with the body horror element of it and, you know, the psychological side of it. I mean, there are moments of amusement and absurdity, but I don't think anyone's ever laughing at this, you know, Justin Long walrus. Everyone, I think you're either horrified, you know, traumatized, upset. No one's ever going, oh, look at that dick in a, you know, costume and stuff like that. It's not that way at all, and I think that is something that's incredibly difficult to do, and I'm impressed that they managed to do it.
I mean, it's all credit, like you say, to Kevin Smith and the team that worked on the, because if they hadn't got that costume right and Justin Long's performance, it could have become, you know, it could have been easily ridiculed. You could have just laughed at it going, that just looks ridiculous. But it does always kind of seem weirdly, sickly plausible. In the same way with the human centipede, where it's like, you know, it's always gross. That could never happen. But it actually goes through in scientific detail, well, yes, that actually, you could actually do what they do in the human centipede. And, you know, it actually goes through in gruesome detail at times with the film about, well, yeah, you could actually, if you really wanted to and you used the film as a guide, I'm sure you could, you know, sew someone up inside a suit of human skin to make them a walrus. I think the most difficult thing is probably putting the tusks in, but other than that, it seems completely plausible, yeah. Hopefully it hasn't inspired too many copycats or anything like that.
I'm curious if it's gonna, if there was ever anyone that did it as a Halloween costume.
Ooh, I wonder. Yeah, no, what, I'm gonna be trawling the internet now looking for, on my search engine, Tusk Walrus Halloween costumes. I don't know if that will just bring up loads of Fleetwood Mac people, but who knows. But I'd be interested to see if Kevin Smith's gonna do next, because, you know, he did the Viewskew universe, you know, he then has done a couple of things which haven't really resonated with audiences, but I'd be interested to see if he went back into the sort of the horror genre again, because I'd be interested to see more from him. But I don't know if it's going to wait on him finding another Gumtree ad to mine for ideas, but who knows.
Absolutely. I'm curious. I'm not the biggest fan of his work, you know, certainly in terms of that. You know, I've seen stuff. I mean, I've seen Clerks 2. I've not seen Clerks 1. You know, there's certain things that I've seen, and I know that there's Sean Eastridge will be having an alarm going off in his head there.
The bat sign's already going up for a Clerks rewatch as well. But no, I mean, Clerks was one of my all-time sort of favourite films growing up. It's one that I would watch every sort of Friday night in advance of going into work at Toys R Us on a Saturday, just to get myself in that, to really appreciate the true sort of customer service level that I needed to provide to everyone. But yeah, no, I mean, he's always been one of my sort of favourite filmmakers. I mean, I haven't always liked all of his films, but I've always got time for him in what he does, and I'm really interested to see, you know, if we ever do get the mooted Clerks 3 sequel that we've always talked, or another Jay and Silent Bob film. But I guess we'll see what happens in the future. But he's a filmmaker which I've always got time for.
Absolutely, and I clearly need to give him a bit more time as well, starting with
because
Clerks.
I love the sort of live shows that he does, and the sort of with an audience with Kevin Smith and stuff like that. I really enjoy those. He's always got some great stories.
The last time he did one of those in Edinburgh, it went on so long, and it impacted on the film festival screening of The Hunt for the Wilder People. And as someone in the crowd to see that movie, waiting to see it, there was a lot of people annoyed at Kevin Smith and asking the cinema staff, like, you know, the volunteers and stuff, get that guy out the screen. We want to see our film. We've been waiting 45 minutes, so don't come between Taiki Waititi fans and his new films, Kevin. That's where a line gets crossed.
I'm imagining in my head now a sort of Anchorman style situation where you've got all these different groupings of film fans who are meeting for a fight in a yard somewhere. You've got Taika Waititi, Kevin Smith, Wes Anderson all turning up in like tweed suits and stuff like that. You know, that I would like to see, actually. That I would like to see. Someone should make a movie of that, I think. Yeah.
Absolutely. Let's get that. Let's pitch that.
Cool. So have you got any final thoughts on Tusk, or is it time to put the walrus to bed?
I think it's wall yes for me and stuff. I thought that was a really surprising movie, and when I watched the first time, I thought, yeah, that was okay, but it's really stuck with me, and I think it's definitely a bit of a treat in a way and stuff, or more of a trick than a treat, but it's well worth it.
Yeah, so it's a sort of guilty pleasure. It's a film which you're kind of repulsed and repelled by watching it. I mean, it was quite stomach churning to watch. You can't actually believe you're actually watching this, but like you say, it's one of those films which sort of stays with you. And I think once you've seen it, there's certain images in it that will never sort of leave your head. But yeah, as Justin Long and as John Lennon would say, you know, I am the walrus, goo 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 choo. So we move swiftly on to our second film that we're looking at today. And as I mentioned earlier, if you're listening to this in the US, we are reviewing Laggies. And if you're listening in the UK, then we're looking at Say When, which is directed by Lynn Shelton, who has directed Hump Day, Your Sister's Sister, which starred Emily Blunt and Amy Adams, and also quite a few other little things, sort of TV episodes and stuff that I was really surprised to see that she did, but she did Glow recently, and also The Good Place. She's done an episode of that. She's been doing a lot of TV as well, New Girl, the Mindy Project and stuff like that, so lots of sort of female led stuff as well. And Hump Day is one of those films which I've always sort of heard about but never actually seen. But I really did love Your Sister's Sister. Do you know much about Lynn Shelton before seeing this film?
No, she's someone I'm maybe hoping to see a bit more of, watch a bit more of with the 52 films by women this year. So I've already added this one to my number for the year, so I'm curious to see some more of her other films.
Yeah, no, I know. I unfortunately rewatched this last year, so I can't add it to my tally, but there's quite a few films. If she does anything in the future, I'll definitely be watching that again. So the film we're watching stars Keira Knightley, Chloe Grace Moretz and Sam Rockwell. It's the story of Megan, a 28-year-old who is at an age where many women would be looking to settle down, but she remains young at heart to the extent that she flees when her boyfriend proposes to her, saying she was going to be at a job finding conference for next week. Megan seeks refuge with 14-year-old Annika, a young girl that she met while buying underagers alcohol. The opportunity to relive her adolescence through hanging out with young kids clearly appeals to Megan, but will her growing relationship with Annika's father force her to face reality at last? So, Lee, what were your first thoughts on the film? Was this the first time you'd seen this film, and what did you think of it?
No, I caught it last year when I sort of really was diving into my 52 films by women. I checked it out and I thought, well, you know, this is on Netflix, I'll give it a go. And, you know, it was fine, you know, I enjoyed it. But it was one of those ones, it's fine for what it is, and you watch it at the time, you think, oh, that was an okay way to spend 90 minutes. But then, since we started this project, I've had to rewatch it again, and it just doesn't sort of hold up to a repeat viewing. And the sort of the issue that I had kind of with the first one that I was able to sort of dismiss, it became a bit more annoying in this one, where it's like, why is this woman, you know, her friends are terrible, her boyfriend's dull, but why is she hanging out with these young kids and stuff? Why is she going through this convoluted thing? And if it was like a guy or anything like that, I would be embarrassed for them as were. So it was just really weird, it just sort of stopped me kind of enjoying the movie, because I was like, God, this woman is a bit of an idiot, and she's not the most likable lead character in the world. You know, Sam Rockwell is really great as the dad, Annika by Chloe Grace Moretz, really good, but kind of Keira Knightley in this isn't that great, her character isn't that great, and that's a bit of a hurdle to kind of overcome a second time.
Yeah, no, I think I saw the film first time probably a couple of years ago. Did I see it at the cinema? I actually might have seen it at the cinema. I probably went to see it because it had Sam Rockwell in it, who ever since Moon I will basically watch anything he's in. I think he's just one of the greatest actors of all time, and I'm always happy to see him in it. Although this is not peak Rockwell, because from what I can remember, Sam does not dance in this film, so it's not peak Rockwell. You know, he really has to be dancing in order to make it a top level film. But I think that was the main attraction for seeing it then. But I mean, this film, yeah, it's a sort of a Arrested Development. It's about a woman who never really got past her sort of high school days and stuff like that. I mean, watching this film again, it was sort of reminded me of the episode of Friends where Monica is like going out with a guy from high school, and she's like telling Rachel, you know how I always wanted to go out with Chip Douglas from high school? Well, today I went out with Chip Douglas from high school. You know, there's these people who never really get past that school thing and never really move on, and that's what's causing her the differences with her friends, who I'd forgotten that it was Ellie Kemper from sort of Bridemaids, and now is sort of blowing up thanks to the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, was her like best friend and stuff, and sort of Mark Webber, who whenever I see him, I just kept thinking, for the band, Scott, for the band. You know, he's in Scott Pilgrim. And yeah, I mean, like you say, the friends are awful. You can't really see why she's still hanging around with him, more in the fact that why they still let her hang around. I guess they feel sorry for her. And why anyone believes that she's at a job-seeking conference or something, or a, you know, improve your life conference for a week, I don't really know, but I mean, yeah, so you've got this sort of thing where convolutedly sort of runs away after getting proposed to, and sort of, yeah, she gets to stay on the floor of a 14-year-old girl's room, and the dad's okay with it, but you know, it's you're on shaky ground there. But I mean, part of the reason why I kind of enjoy the film was because of the performances of some of the characters. So, I mean, Chloe Grace Moretz, I think, is a very good actress and is improving all the time, as we saw last year with Miss Education of Cameron Post. But yeah, I don't know if it was just, like you say, the character, or if it was Keira Knightley's performance. I mean, sometimes I think Keira Knightley can be really good, sometimes not so good. I'm not sure if it's a material. I mean, she always like excels in like the sort of period pieces and stuff like that. But this one, I think it was maybe just the annoyingness of the character that you didn't really care if things worked out for her or not. Perhaps that was it. I mean, what did you think?
You just sort of feel like you just sort of screaming at her, just grow up. I'm all for films where there's like characters where you know it's not necessarily as simple. You like them, dislike them, but this character was just someone that was really kind of quite bland and devoid of any sort of, you know, there's nothing about where you think, you know what, she's someone that's really hard done to here. You know, you accept that her friends aren't the greatest people in the world. But like Megan, her character is just pretty bland. So there's nothing about it where you're thinking, you know, oh man, she's been really, you know, she's been bullied here, or you know, if only the world could see how great Megan is, and these young kids see something that her friends don't see. You don't get that. You just get this bland middle, you know, young woman that somehow feels so much pity on herself that she goes and buys some kids booze and hangs out with them. And you know, even Sam Rockwell, I'm thinking like, man, you can do better than this. Like, he is, you know, even the film, he's got personality and spark. She's got nothing kind of going for it. It's like, Sam Rockwell, don't make this mistake. And especially after all the lies and deceit that she's been through. Like, it's just a very unforgettable movie and it's just certainly one I hope I don't have to watch for a third time.
Oh, I certainly won't make you watch it again. But yeah, I think it's, there needed to be more done with her character to make her more sympathetic and likable. I mean, it's basically sort of showing that, you know, her parents, well, primarily her dad, support her financially, and are basically, she comes around, lazes around on their sofa, eats their food and stuff like that. There's never really any drive or emphasis for her to improve her life, so yet why should she? You know, she's coasting along, she's still with the same boyfriend as she's been from school, and you know, she's suddenly starting to realize that maybe, you know, her life isn't all that. But even in the end, I'm not sure she's really changed as a person. She's just decided to split up with a boyfriend. I haven't really seen any. I think that was probably, actually, think about it, that's probably the biggest thing, is that you don't really see, there's not enough of a change or character arc in her. She's basically, the changes she makes are more circumstantial, of, you know, what the outside pressures are doing to her, rather than they're not coming from within, and therefore that's why you don't sort of buy what happens to her. But I mean, I thought that, you know, Lynn Shettle did a great job with the performances were good, especially like we say, Moretz, Ram Rockwell, great sort of father and daughter. I mean, I'd be happy to watch any film that contains the two of them in again. But yeah, overall it was an okay film, but yeah, it's sort of Laggies certainly is lagging behind other A24 films, and it's certainly not going to be near the top tier when we get to the end of this project, if we ever get to the end of the project. It's one that will probably continue.
We're never getting
it's
to the
always
end.
Going to go on and on and on. As long as A24 keep distributing films, we'll keep watching them and keep reviewing them. So
absolutely, yeah. This finally answers the question about how do you follow a movie where you turn a man into a walrus.
Yeah, I think whatever film we watched after that film was going to not be as memorable, and not be as, there was never going to be as much to talk about as there was when you followed Tusk. But next week, well, not next week, in the next episode, we've got two new films to talk about, and those are going to be Revenge of the Green Dragons and The Most Violent Year. Have you seen any of those? Are you going to give us a quick tease? Any thoughts on those ones?
I haven't seen No, I haven't seen the first one yet, but I have seen A Most Violent Year, and it was one film that I thought really highly of that year. So I'm really excited to revisit again. Jessica Chastain and Oscar Isaacs are always a great pairing, and I think this is a it was a I found the film really gripping at the time. So I'm curious to see if it still
Yeah,
holds up.
no, Revenge of the Green Dragons is one I'd not heard about before the start of this challenge, but I've managed to track down a DVD copy, so I'm going to be watching it this weekend and then posting it down to you so you can watch it in advance of the episode. But as always, we love to hear your thoughts and let us know, if you're watching along with us. You can get us at Join Nerd Party, and you can get me on Twitter at champcelluloid. And my blog, championshipsalad.blogspot.com. And Lee, if people want to talk to you about A24 films or just films in general, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Lee underscore Nostromo, and I look forward to hearing your thoughts on Walrus and Keira Knightley.
Absolutely. And thanks again also for everyone who has provided a review for the A24 project on iTunes. We're currently sitting there with 18 reviews and a 5-star rating. We ran a competition. Before Christmas, where a lucky winner got a Girls on Top Tee and A24 film of their choice. That competition is sadly now closed, but please don't stop that make you stop that from providing a 5-star review in the future if you love our podcast. It really helps sort of raise the profile of the podcast and get the word out there. So we appreciate all your views on the podcast, so let us know what you think. But until next time, it's been a pleasure chatting with you, Lee, and we'll catch you in a couple of weeks for episode 8. Cheers. Bye bye.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.